Rockwired Sound in Albuquerque, New Mexico, of all places. This is Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. On today's show, Rockwired presents music and an exclusive interview with Dr. Mack, the creator of the acclaimed series of children's recordings, Ready to Rock Kids. Stick around for more. Rockwired Radio is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, a limited liability company. Please stand by. Welcome to Rockwired Radio, exclusively at rockwired.com. I'm your host, Brian Lush, and the music is out there. I've got an interesting show for you today. It's going to be a little bit of a departure from my usual MO. For years, Rockwired has showcased music from just about every genre, with the possible exception of classical music. But I think it's actually today's show is actually going to be a first for me. This is going to be my very first kids show, kind of. Today, Rockwired Radio is pleased to welcome child psychologist and songwriter Don McManus, PhD, better known as Dr. Mack, the producer of the award-winning series of music recordings for children entitled Ready to Rock Kids. That series is now in its third installment, and we had a chance to speak with Dr. Mack regarding the recordings and the enthusiastic reception they've received from kids and parents alike, and you'll hear that in just a few minutes. In doing some Quantcast research on my audience, I was surprised to find out how many readers and listeners have children. So, this show is for you. From the CD, Ready to Rock Kids, Volume 3, here is Dr. Mack and Friends with At the Same Time.
No.
Who sings next now?
Oh, it's my turn.
No, it isn't. It's
yes,
my
it
turn.
Is. No, because
but
Patrick
Jeffrey told me that I could go,
it.
And you told
no,
me that I was always waiting, and that's
girls,
not fair.
You two. Come on, wait a minute. You're both talking at the same time, and nobody's listening.
What?
Here, check this out.
Same time, and you can fool someone and be winking at the same time. But if you wanna communicate, take a breath, try to wait, 'cause you can't be talking and listening at the same time. At the same time. Whistling at the same time, and you can hug and be kissing at the same time. But if communicating's your trip, put your finger to your lip, 'cause you can't.
listen. Do 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 do. No, no, you can't. Do 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 dum. Do 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 do.
From the CD Ready to Rock Kids Volume 3, that was Dr. Mack and Friends with At the Same Time. Visit Dr. Mack at his official website, www.drmackmusic.com. All volumes of Ready to Rock Kids are available for purchase there. I had a chance to speak with Dr. Mack about this award-winning series of recordings and the inspiration behind it. Here's how it went. Well, this Dr. Mack and Friends series of recordings is already on Volume 3. Since you started this project up until now, what has been the biggest surprise for you?
The biggest surprise, I would say, is the amazing response to it in some ways, and how slow it's been, too, because it's been kind of a tough economy. But I've won over 10 major awards, and you know, it's just kind of slow going these days with the economy, just trying to get the word out there. So, I'm pretty surprised about that.
I see. And how about reactions from children? Have you ever heard any firsthand, you know, or anything like that?
I've had great reactions from kids. We actually had a research project here in the Santa Barbara schools. And as part of that project, one of the phases, we as almost like a control group, was give the kids a CD just to take home and see what kind of effects they had. So I've got, you know, all kinds of testimonials from kids that they listened to it endlessly over 100 times, you know, and a lot of the parents love it too, and it gives them a vehicle for discussing some of the themes and the topics of the songs. Because what happens in kids, you know, with kids in this age range, in the 4 to 9 age range, is that they tend to groove on something and they listen over and over and over. And if the parents are struggling with that, you know, if there's not really kind of like some entertainment value for the parents, then the parents can sour on it pretty quickly. But we've just been amazed by how well the kids have liked it, and parents as well, just because of the high quality of the music and the diversity of the different styles of songs, as well as the fact that in a lot of kids' CDs you'll hear maybe one or two singers with a few kids as background vocalists, and I put the kids front and center. I'm one of three adult vocalists on the CDs, and then there are probably 10 to 12 for any given song. There are 10 or 12 kids, not on every song, but I've got that kind of a beefy chorus, and then lots of really good individual soloists of the children as well.
Yeah, and the kids are front and center. How did you go about, you know, deciding who would be on, what kids would be on the recording?
It's been a fascinating process. One of the struggles of being a children's music producer is that I get these kids, I audition probably 60 or 70 to choose 6 or 7 at any given time. And so the music teachers in town know about me, and almost all the kids that I have as singers on the CDs are also actors or actresses, little actors. They're little stars from this, that, or the other show in some of the local theater, in Santa Barbara Theater. And so I audition them in my home studio, and I put each child on their own track singing the same song, and then I can not only get a feel for their sound later, and I'll go over that with my partner, but I can also blend any number of kids together and hear what their blend is like as far as the sound of each of different group compilations. So it's quite intensive. The funny part is that when I first auditioned them, I auditioned them on the phone, and I have them sing me Happy Birthday, which is a fabulous song because everybody knows it, and there's an octave jump right in the middle of the song, and that's not an easy thing to do. And it's one of the ways that I first get to know the kids. I say, okay, so sing me Happy Birthday, and I give them the pitch, and then they sing away. It's quite fun.
You're right about that octave jump in that song. It gets worse the older you get. I just had a birthday. Ugh.
Yeah.
But my next question, I guess, is sort of a chicken or the egg, you know, is the chicken or the egg question, you know, music or psychology? What came first, you know?
You know, I really think music came first, because I've been singing and playing and sort of a little bit of dabbling with songwriting for my entire life. I can remember the first little song I wrote when I was about 7 years old. And then when I graduated from college, and I was in one of those quandaries, you know, what should I be? Should I be a musician? Should I be a carpenter? Hey, how about a psychologist? And all these thoughts about what I should be and do. And then I did become a psychologist, because that seemed like a very appropriate thing in terms of my interest in kids. I was pre-med for a while at Dartmouth, and then I decided to be a child psychologist instead. So I moved into child psychology then for years, and then I was actually dabbling around with some adult music. And then, as it would happen, my next-door neighbor heard some of my songs, and he knew very well the head of Alvin and the Chipmunks. So he shared a tape with Ross Bagdasarian, who loved what I did, and then Christopher Cross walked into my life, and then he gave me free studio time and played, and actually sings on some of the songs, a little bit background vocals, but he really believed that that there was something pretty special and important that we had to offer to the world in the way of a message that isn't quite heard so well if chipmunks are singing it. How about children singing it instead, you know? So that's the first part of my evolution into this musical world. So it's been about 20 years now that I've been a professional songwriter. And got involved in a TV show as well that's on PBS now.
Wow, talk about the show.
Okay. The next evolution was I had a classmate of mine from college who approached me and said, you know, we should do a TV version of your songs. And we worked up a concept and we shopped it around, and Porchlight Entertainment was one of the places where we went, and they said, well, we love your songs. Boy, I'm not sure about your show, but would you be willing to become the music director and songwriter for JJ the Jet Plane? And that show was just starting, and we were on the Learning Channel for a year, and then PBS picked it up, and it's still going. It's not in its prime at this point in time in terms of being on every station now. It's kind of wound down a little bit. And I'm now in the process of developing another show with a couple of partners, and we're doing a show about kids who were actually in a band. So that'll be kind of fun. It's another cartoon thing, though.
When I interview artists, I usually ask them what their creative process is, but coupled with that question, I want to ask you, how do you write for children? I mean, most of the artists I come to have, you know, these relationship gone sour songs, but, you know, you're writing to a completely different demographic. I mean, how do you do it?
How do I do it? Well, the inspiration for songs comes from a lot of different sources. I can say that a few of my songs in the earlier days were inspired by some of the challenges with my own kids. And not that there were big challenges, but just, okay, so what is generic to this age range, the 4 to 9-year-old age range, and what are they struggling with? I would say the biggest source of my material is my clients, because day in, day out, I'm still a child psychologist, so, you know, a couple of days a week, I'm pretty much like 2 days a week as a therapist and additional sort of half day as an administrator of a nonprofit. Family and child and, you know, a couples counseling center. And then 4 days a week, I'd say, probably is a fair estimate for my musical involvement and writing songs and producing songs and that sort of thing. So I'm seeing clients, and I can give you one quick example. For this latest CD is a kid who comes in, and he's got a facial tic. So as he's talking to me, his eyebrows sort of doing weird things, and he's sort of winking his eye without, you know, in an involuntary manner. And I'm asking him about himself, and he's telling me, you know, straight up, wow, you know, I just really have a hard time in school. I don't like school. Why not? Because the kids tease me. Because I have this weird thing, you know, this weird facial tic. And so what I did, I wrote a song called Quirks. And it's a funny word, and, you know, not a lot of five-year-olds or seven-year-olds even know what a quirk is, but I like to use a little bit of educational teasing, too, and teach them a phrase or a word or two in the context of my songs. And I wrote a song called Quirks. You know, quirks are things that everybody's got. Some got a few, and some got a lot, and some are kind of cute, but some are not, but little quirks need some understanding. We all need understanding. And then I go in, and the kids are each singing their own verse, and it has to do with, you know, my grandpa always whistles while he works, and grandma's always winking, and my daddy's got a knee that jerks, and, you know, it's just kind of like my sister kisses gerbils, and, you know, so I'm generalizing from, I'm not talking about facial tics, but I'm talking about just the diversity of how it is that we're so different from one another and have these different elements of our personality or of how we look or how we act or anything, that it can be fun. And we shouldn't make light of it, and we should have respect, and we should honor it. And who's to judge? In the bridge we're talking about, you know, and who's to judge, you know, what somebody's got that's different, and how can we not be in that judgmental place? So I'm trying to take some pretty interesting, challenging concepts that kids are struggling with and then put it in the most entertaining form, because we know that music has this special ability to get into the brain in over a dozen different centers where it lights up the brain, and we learn things in a different way. You probably have the experience of thinking back in your own life, where you can think of the lyrics of a song that you haven't heard in 30, 40 years. You know, it's just like it's in there. So, to make a long story short, the essence of my songwriting, then, I'll plant a seed of a concept, and then almost invariably it's the middle of the night, it's when I'm hiking, it's when I'm riding my bike, it's not when I'm thinking about it that things just start to kind of come to me, almost as if it's not like I'm not writing this song. There's something that's kind of moving into me or through me or whatever. And kind of, it feels quite inspired in that sense. And then it unfolds from there. There's a certain part of songwriting that's very much like a craft where, you know, okay, so here's what I want to say. You know, what's the word that's going to rhyme with that? And how's that going to fit? And so then it becomes, you know, then I'll get it to a place where it's a song, and that'll usually take a few weeks. And then I'm really blessed to have this relationship with a writing partner whose name is Brian Mann. And Brian is a multiple award-winning composer. He's traveled and written with Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald and people of that vintage. And he's just an extraordinary collaborator in the sense that he'll take something that's pieced together in a simpler way by me, because I'm, you know, I don't consider myself a professional musician. I consider myself a professional songwriter. But Brian will then take the song to the next level in a way that I could never even imagine. It's just magical what happens in our synergy together, too, as we work on things, which is exactly what we're doing this afternoon.
Visit Dr. Mack at his official website, www.drmackmusic.com. All volumes of Ready to Rock Kids are available for purchase there. From the CD Ready to Rock Kids Volume 3, here is Dr. Mack and Friends once again with Reach Out.
With the words.
was there ever a subject matter that you know, was that ever proved especially difficult to or that you might have had a second thought about? Or
I've had people say to me, could you write a song about a kid whose father's just died? That's a hard thing. I haven't tackled that yet. You know, when you look on the bookshelves, there's books about so many really, really specific things like that, and that's a harder task, because it has to be dealt with in such a sensitive way, and I think to do it would almost cheapen the degree to which every child experiences different things in different ways, and some things just seem to be a little bit too complex to be complex or sad or upsetting to be put in song form. I could do that in a script, and I've done that for the TV show, for example, with some sad scenes, but for the most part, I think music is best for kids in this age range when it's more upbeat, when it's sort of on the happier, the lighter side. I believe, as a developmental and child psychologist, that children in this age range really are ideally in somewhat of a bubble of protection from some of the harsh realities of the world, and so I don't necessarily want to take a 5-year-old and have a song on a CD that's about your father dying, and then he starts to obsess about his father dying, you know?
I see.
So that's kind of that's one example of something that I'd rather deal with. The things that, if you poll 1,000 kids in this age range, will be, at least most of them are struggling with it, you know, like reaching out to friends, like talking out and resolving conflicts with each other, like dealing with their fears of monsters in the night, like dealing with the fact that they feel jealous of a younger sibling, you know, that stuff just, it's so generic, and it's what's already in kids' minds, and it's not like I'm planting seeds that would have some harmful effect to them.
I once saw this documentary about Dr. Seuss, and I remember one quote, from what I learned, you know, he was very uncomfortable around children, but what he said kind of resonated with me, and I wanted to get your opinion on it. He said, when writing to kids as an audience, the most important thing to do was to not talk down to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. And I think that's what can happen when songs are preachy, you know, here, do this, do that kind of stuff, or moralistic, like there's a right and wrong kind of thing. And you know, in life and in psychology and in counseling, things are pretty much in shades of gray. And so, yeah, I would completely agree with that, that in a way, there's two ways that I think my music's a bit different, in that one is that it doesn't talk down to kids with the lyrics or the words or the messages or the meanings. But the second way is that as a function of my role as a psychologist and as a school consultant, for years I have been able to go into classrooms and interact with kids and sometimes be center stage in a class, and I'll say, okay, so who are you guys into, you know? Raise your hands, and they raise their hands, and they tell me, you know, well, it used to be Justin Timberlake, you know, it's, you know, Lady Gaga, it's, you know, it's hip-hop, it's rap. And believe me, now I've interviewed and talked to preschool teachers who are saying the same thing, which is kids are way more musically sophisticated these days. The effect of the media and the pop culture in influencing kids as young as, you know, 4 years old is amazing, because these kids are done with Raffi. They're done with Barney. They're done with sing-songy, strum the guitar thing. They're ready to launch into the world of rock and rap. And so what we try and do is take that musical sophistication, take all that really good stuff that they're clamoring for, and yet then put different kinds of words and meanings and lyrics into the songs that are way more appropriate. I even feel like Falling in Love is not a great topic for a five-year-old, you know, to talk about love and to talk about affiliation and connection and caring and all that, that's great. But falling in love and the romance things and some of the kids' plays that they do over and over again because they're just recycling adult stuff, they're doing Bye Bye Birdie, they're doing things, you know, even Peter Pan and Wendy, you know, having a love affair or whatever it is that, you know, the kids are. So I think that's one way that kids really, it's inappropriate to have exposure to adult themes and topics. And so we're just trying to really zero in on, so what are the themes, what are the challenges, and how, from this position of me being inside of kids' heads all the time, because I'm talking to them constantly, and they're telling me about the challenges that they're having, how can I then make that a fun learning process for them to be able to meet these challenges in different ways?
You sort of answered this, but I'm going to ask the question anyway, just because I always ask this one. What would you like someone to come away with after they've heard this series of songs?
A sense of a belief in themselves as kids, a sense that there is a way of handling things that really can work so that people can be happier, the knowledge that we're really all connected to one another, and so acting in ways that operate out of that I'm separate from you, and so if I have vengeance or if I get back at you or things like that, that there's gain from that. So a real strong notion about our interconnectedness, and probably just as important or more important than all of that stuff is how it is that I could, how can I handle my feelings in ways that don't get me in trouble? You know, we have this huge body of research now about the brain, and I'm a student of that and also a teacher of that and actually a lecturer on it. And what I really value is my ability and the opportunity that I have to take all of the science of how it is that our brains work that then parlays into how it is that we can be better parents and teachers, and then what are the ways that we can take this knowledge, this new set of knowledge, I call it kind of like the social technology, and parlay that into some ideas that are really useful so that people can bring out the best in each other. You know, that's huge. We have the technology now to know how to bring out the best in people. Now, how do we educate folks? Even at the youngest ages, how do we educate both kids and then parents, because they're listening too, about how they can bring out the best in each other so that they're happier and so that they're more capable of learning? Because what we know is when kids have social and emotional challenges, their little emotional brains are buzzing, they're activated, and their ability to learn then is hugely compromised. Example. A child's teased in the playground. He goes back into the classroom. He's sitting there gazing at the blackboard. The teacher's trying to teach him some, you know, 3 plus 6 or something, and he's at the lunch. There is no way that when we are overwhelmed, or what the researchers call flooded emotionally, that we have the ability to engage our prefrontal cortex in learning. So, and then we know that stress, if I can get technical just for one more second here, stress affects the hippocampus. And the hippocampus is the part of the brain where we then later, usually when we're asleep, we're integrating the learning of that previous day. It's almost like we're consolidating things into longer-term memory. So now we know that stress affects the hippocampus's ability to consolidate long-term memory. So if you gave me a very stressful day and you gave me a task of learning something versus if I'm under way less stress, I'm a way better learning machine if I've had less stress. So there's now all these interesting connections about, you know, stress doesn't just affect blood pressure or whatever. It's just, it's hugely important in the learning process. So kids are under a lot of stress because of the challenges of being in a society where there's now an economic downturn, they're under stress because of the onslaught of the media. They have to grow up too quickly. They're pushed too much around the world in terms of do this, do that, instead of having time to kind of mellow out at times, instead of being rushed around the neighborhood for various activities. So there's all the stress, and then the idea that we have is, so how, what tools can we give kids? If stress is building, it's bigger than it was 10, 20 years ago, how can we give people tools, especially children, to be able to handle that stress?
Visit Dr. Mack at his official website, www.drmackmusic.com. All volumes of Ready to Rock Kids are available for purchase there. From the CD Ready to Rock Kids Volume 3, here is Dr. Mack and friends once again with Big Kids Know How to Cry. That's going to do it for this edition of Rockwired Radio. Special thanks go out to Don McManus, PhD, and Rhonda Brilliant of Rainmaker Media Group. For Rockwired, I'm Brian Lush, and remember, keep your eyes forward, never look back, and make it up as you go. Rockwired Radio is a production of Rockwired Media, LLC, limited liability company, and is available exclusively at rockwired.com.